This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. On Wednesday evening, a new character in Washington's endless dramedy entered center stage.
The Justice Department tonight naming the former FBI director, Robert Mueller, special counsel to take over the investigation into Russia's meddling in the 2016 election and possible collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians.
The reaction from Breitbart? Why no investigation of Obama? From the Daily Caller? Mueller made the FBI soft on radical Islam. From Rush Limbaugh, that whole Russia scandal was invented by Hillary Clinton. But the reaction from the conservative standard-bearer, National Review, is Trump brought the special counsel investigation on himself. Indeed, as the popular far-right-wing media deflect reality's grubby developments, the media of the intellectual right, such as the National Review, the Weekly Standard, and Commentary, grapple with the question of how, if at all, Trump's presidency can move the conservative agenda forward, and what their role can be. In a blog post last week, Commentary Associate Editor Noah Rothman lamented that the window in which real legislative achievements could be secured is closing rapidly. Noah, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, in the midst of this past week, rather than focus on Comey or Trump's shared intelligence with Russia, much of the right-wing press seized on murdered Democratic National Committee staffer Seth Rich. Big news?
No, it is not big news, unfortunately, and that is an outgrowth of an impulse on, I wouldn't call them the extreme right, but I would call them the pro-Trump right, to shift attention away from the presidency, which is just a defeating prospect. You cannot shift attention away from the presidency. It is all-consuming. The thing about people who are like me and my colleagues who were Trump skeptical during the primaries and Trump skeptics still is that, you know, we've kind of come to terms with the fact that this is the presidency, and to the extent that he can be a vehicle to achieve conservative legislative achievements, he's valuable.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that he becomes an obstacle to that, he is less valuable.
So your evolution in the past 18 months, as you moved from Trump skeptic to Trump resigned, or perhaps Trump the opportunity, I mean, where have you traveled?
Well, I consider myself still a Trump skeptic, I believe, in more ways than not.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't approve of the things he's done, which are conservative or valuable, I think, to American national interests. For example, the appointment of certain members to cabinet-level positions. I'm not skeptical of Betsy DeVos. I'm not skeptical of Mr. Pruitt, the EPA director. And the attack, for example, on the Assad regime targets, well, that was short-lived, and I would prefer a longer campaign, was long overdue.
You wrote that the door to consolidate conservatism is closing, that immigration reform, an infrastructure bill, an IRS reform bill, the border wall, passing a budget, this ambitious legislative agenda is already behind schedule. You tweeted on Thursday, conservatism is in crisis. Few now speak its assumptions, fearing their unpopularity in practice.
Donald Trump ran for the presidency against conservatism in a large way. He ran on a platform contending that it was heedless, that it was cruel, in fact, that people would be, quote, dying in the streets if we were to enact healthcare reform along the lines of what conservatives have promised that they do for quite some time. So we knew we had somebody who was skeptical towards conservatism, but who nevertheless didn't have an ideology. So there was something of an opportunity there. There's nothing that achieves something faster than not heeding ideology. Ideology stays your hands. Pragmatism demands means that justify ends. Doesn't matter really what those ends are.
The Republican Party believed that he could achieve things because he was a pragmatist, but in terms of ideology, he was tabula rasa, and they could write that in?
Well, he could be gently guided in a direction that was a more conservative direction. Because Donald Trump was elected as a, sort of an anti-ideologue with the whole apparatus of the Republican institution intact. All these Republicans who had been elected in 2010, 2014 ran on very conservative platforms. So they understood that perhaps they could put a lot of legislation in front of him that was conservative, as he was put his signature to it, because he needed wins. Wins were the objective, and the Republican Congress would provide him with wins. It turns out that he's rather addicted to drama and has a tendency to step on his own message, and he has tied the hands of Congress because he has thrown curveballs at them left and right.
So make your case for the door being virtually closed.
Well, if they're pursuing a budget reconciliation process, which is a maneuver whereby they don't need 60 votes to pass something, they got to do that before mid-June. The window closes. Then it reopens again in the autumn, where things are going to be a lot more politically difficult because we're closer to an election year. They need tax code reform and to move on to all those other reforms that I talked about. And all that was supposed to happen by April. It just seems like we're too far behind schedule now to really catch up, especially if we have a new FBI director who is going to have to get confirmed. When Jim Comey was fired, they were in the middle of a healthcare markup, and that had to be stopped dead in the water because they had to respond to media inquiries. And yet all we hear from this White House are things that reopen that investigation and make more news that absorbs senators' time.
So the Republican moment is already lost?
Yes. The Republican moment to achieve radical sweeping legislation to the tune of what Democrats achieved in the 111th Congress in 2009 and 2010. Financial reform, healthcare reform, the stimulus project, all those things that were passed by the 111th Congress, that's done. We're not going to see anything like that.
Now, we've heard the word impeachment bandied about. Some people are even invoking the 25th Amendment. But you believe that essentially support for the GOP will crater if their party's leader is subject to that kind of censure. And you wrote that for Republicans, the path of least resistance is to march sheepishly toward November 2018, standing behind their party's titular head, come what may. Right?
Right.
So what happens to conservatism then?
There was a very well-received New York Times opinion piece by a former radio host by the name of Charlie Sykes that addressed this issue. He said that conservatism has become sort of amorphous. There's very little policy on the table. There's very even little philosophy on the table. What we're talking about now is a man, a very mercurial man. And whatever he does and whatever he happens to do, we feel the need to defend, if only because the people who are attacking him are people we don't like.
Sounds like you guys have a big problem.
Kind of corrupting. It is a problem. I wrote a piece for the June issue of Commentary, the print magazine, which tries to address what Charlie Sykes wrote in his column, that we're not talking about any issues, we're just talking about a man, by talking about some issues. Healthcare, national defense, the morality of a preemptive defense, the efficacy of incrementalism, big, comprehensive legislation is almost never comprehensive, and it's usually rife with unintended consequences. The variety of things that conservatives used to believe, but have sort of forgotten.
Pushing against the tide to write about issues rather than Trump. And you hoped that perhaps that would cross over to audiences beyond your customary ones.
Pro-Trump conservative audiences. The idea is to re-acclimate people to a conservative worldview that they've otherwise forgotten in the rush to defend Trump against a media onslaught that, by the way, is excessive. I do try to tailor a message to make sure that people hear it who need to hear it. For example, this frustrated some of my friends on the left when they read a recent column by Eric Erickson in The Resurgent, who had requested, against all odds, that Donald Trump consider resignation in order to get the ship on track. And he opened with a broadside against the liberal movement. The left said, why can't we hear a column from the right that is just without reservation or qualification attacking Republicans? Why do they have to go after Democrats? It's so counterproductive. It's not. You're talking to a particular audience.
So that shows that you're one of the brethren. You're right. One of them.
Right.
You look at conservatism now. You've got a fractious group of potential voters out there. You have a message that is being obscured by the spectacle of this presidency, flashing lights all over the place. So, you know, what do you do to clarify your ideas, to build some unity among the constituency you'll have to rely on to turn your priorities into policy?
No one is happy right now who's honest on the right. There's a lot of people who are not being honest about how thrilled they are with this administration. But people who are, say, on my side are very frustrated. The alt-right is miserable. They are beside themselves.
Why?
Because Donald Trump has not done anything he promised he would do. He has given up on border funding for the wall. There is no deportation force. The fact that he exercised his authority to execute strikes on Syria suggested to them the return of neoconservative foreign policy. The Atlantic asked for a quote from Ann Coulter during those strikes, and she responded that she just couldn't because she was just too depressed. For now, the narrative framing in order to reach voters for whom no message gets through is as I'm trying to do it, which is to say this is what you want, which is really conservative policy, and you need to express that to this presidency. The style and the false bravado that is Donald Trump is very attractive to the conservative movement that believes their representatives haven't fought for their priorities, whatever those happen to be. And that's,
but it's style, not the content.
I don't think there's very much content there. When you get down to actual policy prescriptions, again, look at the alt-right. The alt-right really was paying attention to policy. They weren't just paying attention to affect. They wanted their views represented in Washington, and they didn't get it. They're really frustrated by that. Anybody who's being honest on the right would express frustration with this presidency.
Noah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Noah Rothman is the associate editor of Commentary, a conservative monthly.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.